Hello, friends, and welcome back to the latest episode of Magic in the Ordinary, where we talk about magical things in ordinary, mundane life. And really, what I wanted to talk about today is how to approach literature. There's a couple reasons I wanted to do this. One is because it can seem a little daunting to a lot of people. And two, even if we do read it frequently, I think it's really beautiful to be intentional about how we're reading these literary works, how we're getting the most out of them. Obviously, there's a lot of good content in them if people have been reading them for hundreds of years and are still reading them going strong. But I think oftentimes, I've seen this with my students, there can be kind of this sense of being intimidated by literary works or being frustrated with them because they're different than we expect, things like that. So this is definitely, you know, not an official class or not a end-all be-all. And I just wanted to share some of my thoughts about how to get the most out of literature. And I would love, I know I'm not going to say everything that there is to say about this. I'm just scratching the surface, but I'd love to hear other people's thoughts in the comments. Shoot me a DM on Instagram at Jacqueline Rose Gold. But yeah, tell me what you think of these things. I wanted to share a little bit of a glimpse into my process as a literature teacher, where my job is to teach works of literature to, you know, elementary students, middle school, and high school students. And from what I've found, it's kind of my belief at this point that, you know, it's not about whether they like literature or not. It's whether or not you're able to explain to them how to like literature. You know what I mean? I think in my experience, if I do a good job in a class, oftentimes most of the students will come away having gained a deeper appreciation of it. And I think that that is my job as a teacher. You know, I don't almost approve that these books are worth something or valuable. And I have a lot of students who just enjoy it on their own, just because of their own thing. Anyways, this is a tangent. The point is we're going to talk about literature today. We're going to discuss how to systematically approach it, whether you are a student, whether you are an adult who reads literature all the time and wants to get more out of it. And this is just kind of my thoughts on it. And I'd love to just start this conversation, hear more about what you think about how to get more out of literature. Okay, step one. If you are a student, you really have no, or you probably don't have as much control over what you're reading. So, you know, it's best to just go in then with a bold face. I try to pick really books that I think are fun because I think there's a higher likelihood of other people thinking they're fun. So we probably will never read Animal Farm in my classes, you know, just kind of throwing that one out there. I'm sorry if you love it. I don't. I have read it. I think there's a lot of depth in that book, but I don't think it's enjoyable for me. A lot of my, you know, I've had a lot of people I've talked to who have been forced to read Animal Farm and then decided they don't like literature afterwards. So I think that there is something about that book which is very not enjoyable. If you like it, that is really cool. You should probably let me know so we can have a conversation and you can try to help me understand why people think of that as such a beautiful classic. Anyways, that aside, I think there are some classics that are, you know, maybe not our favorites, but I think if we're reading, the first step to enjoying literature is to pick an enjoyable book, obviously. So I'm going to give three suggestions. If you are looking for some book suggestions, these are pretty popular. So you might have already read them. If not, please do yourself a favor and read these. These are so much fun. And they're pop culture books. They're books that have a lot of references within pop culture, so it's like you're entering into this realm of culture. So anyways, number one, if you're looking for something a little spooky, Dracula. Dracula is referenced everywhere in this culture, and it's so fun to return to the original story. This really shaped a lot of our current modern and postmodern ideas about monsters. It really looked at, studied this monstrous creature that was so close to being a human. And there were a lot of vampires before Dracula, but Dracula really has massively inspired our own cultural understanding of what vampires look like, how they operate, all of those things. Of course, he's very different from Edward still, it's very, very interesting. It's a fascinating read. It's spooky. It's exciting. It's done through media. So it's like, it feels like a collection of like journal entries and letters and things where somebody kind of just compiled them all together. And what you get is this really exciting story. I have always wanted to rewrite Dracula and have it be like text messages and emails and things like that, modern, you know, maybe tweets, like just modern news media, and rewrite it with that, because I think we could do a really fun job, and then we could explore how vampires have progressed since then, which would be a fascinating question. Anyways, if you haven't read it, totally read it. Check it out. I think it's enjoyable. Some people find it pretty spooky, but a lot of my high schoolers who have read it just straight up just loved it. They just enjoyed it. They said it wasn't too scary at all, but it was super fast-paced and exciting. So that's number one on the list. If you're looking for a little bit more of a romance, Pride and Prejudice. Can I get an amen from the crowd? Amen. So I think this book is a classic for a reason. And every time I read it, I'm like surprised again by how good it is. It's that fun. It's so witty. I mean, no one does snarky, sarcastic humor like Jane Austen does. Maybe there's someone out there. If there is, please let me know, because I need that. I need that book too. But Jane Austen she excels at this, especially in Pride and Prejudice in particular. She excels at this kind of wittiness, this sarcasm, this ironic sense of humor that's just absolutely delightful. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful setting to go into. So if you're very imaginative, it's very fun to live in that side of the Regency era. I know that there was a less pleasant side, but you know, she's talking about the upper class. It's very filled with parties and balls, and also, you know, just on top of like, it's a pretty romance. It's really funny. It's also really Jane Austen captures the human experience so well in terms of like social dynamics. Like, I love reading this book with anyone, obviously friends or my students, because we're all able to relate on such a deep level. Like, we're all able to say, yeah, I get it. And especially my really sarcastic high schoolers, you know who you are. I think they're able to appreciate her humor in a special way because it's very similar to their own. She's very sarcastic. She's very funny, but she's also seeing who people are. And I'm very, very impressed with her way of just capturing the social dynamics of a whole group so quickly. Like, you have that guy who's a bit of a player, but everyone likes him. You have that girl who's flirting with him, even though she shouldn't be. But, you know, there's all of these social dynamics, which I feel like you just see in modern times so clearly as well. Go into the mall and it feels like you're stepping back. You know, you're still in a Jane Austen novel. You know, she's able to capture all of those things. So Pride and Prejudice is another one I would suggest, especially to any literary beginners. The third one I was going to say is The Iliad, actually. And that's a super old classic. Like, we're going back BC, you know, we're going back really, really far. But the reason this book is so good for beginners is, and some people would argue the Odyssey, just so you're aware, so keep that in mind, but the Iliad comes first, and it bothered, you know, I just feel like it's really good to read that one first. The reason this book is so cool is because we are still obsessed with Greek myths, and this is kind of going back to the OG, you know, where it's, you know, we're seeing something, we're seeing kind of the origins of this, of a lot of the things that still permeate our culture. We're still obsessed with Greek myths. We still give shout outs to them in our brand names, in our stories, in so many different little aspects. This has really permeated our culture. And so I think it's really fun to go back to the Iliad, where we're getting stories about Zeus and, you know, Aphrodite and stuff. And we're seeing them kind of through this really ancient lens, how they were first looked at to some degree. It's really, really fun. And if you like battles, this is the way to go. I get kind of grossed out by some of the imagery in this book. So that's something to keep in mind if you're not super excited about that. But I think that this book is just, it's fun. It jumps right into, which is kind of nice, because a lot of classics take a little time to get in. But this jumps right into the action. There's people arguing. There's tensions. Tensions are high. There's massive battles going on. There's brave heroes. It's exciting. I think that might be a really good fit for some people too. So those are my three suggestions for, like, if you're going to try to suggest something to a friend and they haven't read a piece of literature before, maybe one of those would be a really good fit. If you haven't read, a lot of classics before, go for it. And I guess, I'm talking, and when I say literature, I am thinking mostly classics, like the classic literature. So Anyways, those are three that I would suggest. So step one to getting the most out of literature is pick something that's going to resonate with you, that you're going to enjoy. Maybe whether it's the Pride and Prejudice romance and social dynamics, whether it's the epic battle and ancientness of the Iliad, or it's the, you know, spooky kind of... it was a dissection into identity, and monsters and that kind of thing in Dracula. So that's the first step. So that was long-winded, but here we go into the next step. Where was I going to go with this? Dang it. Okay. The next step I think I would say is be patient. Okay. Step two, be patient. And I think that, this is kind of an important step. Our modern books are really, and everything now in our modern lives, are really trained to have to force our attention, almost like they need to get us addicted to that as quickly as possible. There's so much psychology that has gone into developing apps that make our brains, you know, give us that shot of endorphins that we need to get kind of hooked on it. And so everything, you know, whether that's the apps that we're doing, a lot of the books are very, sensual and dramatic and fast moving. They're kind of like candy. They're just adrenaline rushes. A lot of movies have just turned away from art to some degree and into adrenaline rushes. And our entire society is really geared towards getting our attention and trying to get us hooked as quickly and deeply as possible, using anything they can really to get our attention there. Because of that, I've found that it's really hard sometimes for people to sit down and just focus on a book. And I think that this is really interesting. I'm a reader. I know a lot of my listeners are readers too. And I guess just personally, sometimes if I spend too much time on social media or on even reading more modern books, it can be hard for me to sit down with a classic, even one that I know I love. So I don't know, this is kind of my second tip, because, you know, second tip is be patient with yourself as you get into a piece of literature, as you start reading a classic, because for me, that's been really important. Not getting like, you know, not being like, I love this. Like sometimes I don't love a piece of literature right away, that instant I pick it up, because it's a shift in gear. There's a shift in pace, right? I'm used to scrolling and there's constant images and bright lights and pinging notifications and, or even in more modern books, it's very adrenaline packed. I want a page turner. I want to not be able to put it down, you know, this kind of thing. These aren't bad things. Like I like social media. I've talked about on this channel, I've talked on this podcast about how I really actually like social media. If it's used the right way, I like modern books a lot. And I've seen some ones that are going to be literature. Like they're very, very good. Like they're going to be a classic. So that's all to say though, that our current lives are very much geared towards a different pace than a lot of the classics are. They're geared towards this. I feel like they're even in grocery stores, the way things are set up, or ads, the way we're just inundated with people like using all of their psychological background and knowledge of how human psychology works to try to get our attention, right? So going into a classic, which is from a different era, is often a little bit of a learning curve, at least for me. I feel like it can be just a shift in pace. It's a change in pace, right? And so I think one of the things that I've learned is so important when you're attacking tackling a book, a classic, is to just sit for a little bit and be patient. It's way more about the journey than the destination in this case. And this is really, really cool. It might take a couple chapters to really find the rhythm, but it's amazing what happens once this is the case. So first of all, like classic literature, like it doesn't just jump into the action right away necessarily. It, to some extent, it does, really, if you look at Pride and Prejudice, actually, never mind. Sometimes literature just jumps right in. But I've had a lot of students tell me, you know, I was really bored with this book for the first, like, five chapters, and I was really frustrated with our class. And then after that, I couldn't put it down, and I've actually read the chapters for next week, too. You know, so this is what I've seen, I guess, in my experience, and this I've kind of felt that as well, where maybe the first couple chapters, I'm trying to ease back into it. It's a little bit tricky, right? It's a little bit tedious even, but once I put in that work, I am rewarded so, so deeply. And I think a piece of this is to start enjoying the words themselves, not just what action is happening, but how are they saying it, okay? And looking deeper into, like, you know, what are we getting in this scene? So anyways, step one, pick a book you like. Step two, be patient with yourself as, you know, you enter into this classical realm. I think this, you know, this looking patient too is probably going to have to look a little different for each person. I know some of us are slow readers. Some of us are fast readers, but we want it more page turning, whatever it is. And maybe, you know, I know there are some people who just, they click with literature, and that's so beautiful. But I think for myself, I found that when I get too inundated with a lot of stimuli from our modern culture, it can be a little bit of a transition into slowing down enough for a classical piece of literature. The benefits have been huge, though. It's been amazing seeing how my attention span has deepened, how my thought process has deepened through reading more literary works. I love it. So that's number two. Number three is orient yourself in the setting and get to know the characters. So kind of like get situated in the story. So number three, get situated in the story. It's really fun, I think, to try to look at the setting and just to be intentional about kind of exploring it a little bit. You know, if this is part of the fun, like in Dracula, I love this setting, this dramatic, moody setting. And I think it's kind of fun to be intentional about seeing it and to recognizing that it's very different than our own. Same thing with Pride and Prejudice. This is my chance to visit England in the 1800s. Same with the Iliad. It's my chance to see into ancient Greece, which is so cool. And it's kind of a privilege, actually. So I think appreciating the setting is one thing. Like, I always ask my students questions of, like, where is this? What's your gut reaction to it? You know, some students are horrified at all the fighting in ancient Greece, and they want to get back home as soon as possible. That recognizing that visceral reaction actually can really help delve deeper into a book, because you're kind of looking at, like, okay, why is this so jarring to me? Why is this so different than my own setting? But what I often find is often people will actually appreciate getting this sneak peek into a different era, into a different world, really. And then they'll also start to find a lot of similarities of, like, you know, maybe I don't know what Dracula's world would be like, but I have enough of my own, I don't actually know. I don't have any examples of how Dracula's world could be like ours. But you get the point. There can be people, Pride and Prejudice sticks out to me a lot, where there's a setting of England and it's very posh, but then there's this kind of sense of, like, oh, I get the similar dynamic. So the setting is starting to feel more familiar to me, even if it's not. So get yourself situated, kind of look at maybe similarities and differences in your setting in that one, and it'll help you be intentional and kind of get into the book. The other thing is the characters. So at the beginning of a book, you really want to get to know the characters. This is a unique challenge sometimes in classical pieces of literature, especially when you get things like Russian literature, which I have not read any Russian literature, apologies, but I've heard a lot about how many characters you're thrown, you know, into conversation with in the first chapter. For me, Dickens has quite a few characters, and as I teach Dickens, I realize, like, he has a lot of people, and a lot of my students have a little bit of a hard time keeping him straight, or all of them straight. So here's some advice for getting situated with characters is, my first piece of advice is often just pretend you're at a party. It's like, you know, when you go to, like, introverts are going to shudder, but, like, you know, when you go to those big parties and there's a million people and you're just kind of, like, mingling a little bit and you're saying hello, you know, maybe you'll really remember that one cute guy. Maybe you'll remember that one girl who you had a really nice conversation with and had a little heart to heart with even. You might not remember that other guy in the corner whose name was, I don't know, I don't remember. You know, so there's this kind of sense of, you don't try to put pressure on yourself to have to remember every single person's name. You're not sure if you'll see them again. If you do, you'll ask their name again. It's fine. So I kind of try to think of it like a party. Like, everyone's just kind of mingling around. You don't have to know every single person, but you just kind of, who sticks out to you, kind of stick with them. And then the next time you show up to the party, aka the next chapter, maybe you'll kind of, a new name will stick. So that's my approach to reading books is I don't try to put pressure on myself to memorize every single character, especially for me, not the first time reading through it. Because the first time reading through it, I'm just trying to absorb as much as I can, but I'm not putting pressure on myself to absorb everything because I know I can't. So that's my approach. There's another approach, which I sometimes do with Shakespeare plays, and this is to create a cast list. So in Shakespeare plays, I have my students actually print off pictures of actors or actresses that they think would represent this character really well, and then write the name underneath. And this actually helps a lot because, if you're trying to remember who is King Claudius, and then you have this picture of this grumpy, creepy looking king, it's gonna just sear in your memory a little bit better. So, there's that. Even watching a movie, honestly, of a classic can kind of help build that, because then you have all of the pictures of people's faces in your head, and then you just attach names to them. So, and the other thing is get a visual, basically. So, you know, if you're having a hard time with characters, one, you could pretend you're at a party. Two, just get a visual. Three, other people get really, really analytical, and they have their colored coded pens, and they, you know, try to write down character descriptions and help themselves remember everyone, or they'll have a notebook where they'll write down everyone's names. If that is your style, Go for it. That's so awesome. And I think it's so fun reading those kinds of notebooks. I'm so impressed by people like that. I am 100% the show up at the party and remember who you can. And then maybe next time you'll remember a couple more characters. What's fun with the party method, by the way, is that the second time I read the book, sometimes I'll be better friends with air quotes, better friends with a different character. Like I'll have read it. I'll say like, oh, the protagonist is so awesome. I love this protagonist. I don't remember all the side characters, but I really like the protagonist. Then often the second time reading it through, I'll be like, actually the protagonist's friend is my favorite person right now. I don't know why I like the protagonist so much. And then I'll read it the third time and maybe I'll actually like the villain this time because it's so interesting to dissect this person's brain and think about what makes them tick and stuff like that. So That is kind of my approach to absorbing characters and setting. And I think in literary works, they're just a different snapshot of the human experience, right? They're not our modern experience. They're a very privileged and beautiful look into what it means to be human in a different era, in a different world, in a different time period. And because of that, it just takes a little bit more time getting adjusted, but getting situated with the setting and the characters is so, so important. All right, recap. So number one, pick a fun book. Number two, be patient with yourself as you delve into it. Number three, get to know the characters in the setting. Number four, ask yourself questions. Okay, this is a big one. Ask yourself questions. I actually, I will do this with a pen or with a pencil in the margins of my book. And this is really, really fun because then as you get better at reading, you know, you're going to learn more and more, or your thoughts are going to get more and more advanced, and you're going to be able to see yourself growing kind of in the margins of the page as you reread the book. Which is really, really fun. So, this is actually a bonus point. Always read a book with a pen nearby. It changes it from a lecture to a dialogue. I think that's a paraphrase of a quote I heard somewhere, but I love that. It changes it from a lecture to a dialogue. You are talking to your book. You have things to say. You have a perspective to bring to the table. Reading isn't just somebody telling you about this old story. I mean, reading, you should be involved in your reading, right? If there's, if you're really loving this hero, maybe you're going to it can be as simple as drawing hearts in the margins, or drawing exclamation marks when you're shocked, or drawing an angry face or a sad face, like little emoji style things in the margins as you're reacting to this book. And then you can also write like what you're thinking, right? Like what you're thinking about the book, or ask questions about what you're seeing. There's different kinds of questions, obviously. Comprehension questions are really basic, where you're like, what is actually happening? That's like the fundamental, like, what are the facts? The facts were these. So the basic fundamental questions that you want to ask yourself is, am I understanding what's even happening? If not, there's lots of literary summaries, so you're good to go in that regards. The other kinds of questions are a little bit deeper, and I kind of think this is peeling the onion, right? Where you're going a level deeper. And this is the cool thing about the human experience. Like, we have conversations with people. It's not just the words in the air, you know, that we said. It's the body language. It's and we're not even just bringing, even if you factor in all of the body language, all of the different dynamics that we're analyzing, you know, human experience is even deeper than that. We're all bringing a history of our lives. We're all bringing former knowledge that we have into situations. It's the human experience. Like, being human is complex. It's rich. It's deep. And like I've said, literature is such a cool way of getting a new glimpse into the human experience. And the classics, these ancient pieces, these ancient works are, or even just older works, are a really cool glimpse into that. And so asking ourselves questions that can help us kind of poke at this, poke a little deeper and be like, what's actually happening here is really, really good. This, I think, is a crazy skill. At some point, maybe I'll just do an episode all about asking questions. Like, let me know if that's interesting to anybody. Because I think this is a very, very advanced skill, actually. I know a lot of you guys already have this. But I like thinking about this a lot because I think sometimes it's kind of my vibe that sometimes in our society, people kind of feel like asking questions is a sign of not knowing as much. And in my experience, what I have found is if someone is able to ask questions, they're much, much smarter than if they're not able to. Whether that's they're not able to because they physically can't and they can't think of questions, or they're unable to, they don't want to look stupid, you know. So we all should have questions. We don't know everything. And I think this is my favorite, like, if you're going to enjoy a piece of literature, come in with lots of questions, and that's going to help it be so much fun. Being like, what makes this person tick? What makes them work? You know, what's their motivation? What's their desire? That's such a good one. You know, what do these characters want out of life? Exploring this is going to make the book so, so interesting. Another question I love to ask is, you know, how do they change? There are your static characters who are, you know, they're staying there. They don't change at all. And there's the dynamic characters who are morphing. They're not the same person at the end of the book. How does that happen? What's the trajectory? This is so fascinating because real people change, you know? Well, hopefully, you know, hopefully you're changing for the better. And we don't often, you know, it can be tricky sometimes to zoom out of our own lives and see, like, look, how has this person's trajectory changed throughout their, you know, the last 3 years or something like that. But books, you know, you can sit down, you can listen to them on Audible or read them. And I don't know, they usually take like maybe 30 hours. That's actually, I don't know, how big of a book are we talking? I don't know. Anyways, the point is, a book is a little bit faster than real life sometimes, and it can give us this really cool overview of a character arc. It can show us change, and it can help us to analyze it so that we can apply what we learned about character change to our own lives. And this is so cool for a number of reasons, because if once we start saying, like, how has this character changed, it helps give us new perspectives into the people around us, because maybe we see a character that we initially despise, they change, and we're looking at someone in our life who we used to despise, they changed, and that can help us bring a new perspective. Maybe it's a totally different situation. Maybe it helped, like, but whatever it is, often asking how this character, you know, digging into the character, asking, like, how do they change? Who are they? What motivates them? This helps us understand humanity as a whole way better. And understanding humanity as a whole when you are a human interacting with other humans is just really, really helpful. And it's really, really cool. So I love kind of analyzing these characters, looking at their differences, similar, asking, how are they similar? How are they different? This is another, compare and contrast is, like, it's a skill which is really fun, because then we can start to draw connections and we can start to, you know, kind of dig deeper into people's characters. The other, I think this is going to be my final question for you guys for this book is, what does this story claim is it means to live a good life? Did I say that right? What does it mean to live a good life? Every story makes a claim about this. Every story makes a claim about what it means to live a good life. And it's really fun to ask yourself, what is that claim and do I agree with it? So if there's a little girl, like if there's a story about a little girl who wants to be a ballerina and she disobeys her parents and she ends up getting her ballet shoes after all, and everything ends up working out happily ever after. That story is implicitly saying, don't listen to your parents. It will all work out in the end. Okay? There's a claim there. I feel like there's like a million stories like this, and they kind of bother me because I feel like their claim about what it means to live a good life is flawed. I feel like oftentimes there would actually be consequences, or if there wouldn't, you know, then maybe the parent was wrong. You know, anyways, there's other, you know, that's kind of a silly example, but there's other stories about fighting dragons. What's the implicit claim there? The claim is, if you're brave, if you're willing to face down danger and you're willing to do what it takes to fight the monsters in your life, you'll be rewarded. You'll be a hero. There'll be something good will happen to you, you know? And so there are claims in every book. Those are some really, really basic ones, but every book has a claim and maybe multiple claims about what does it mean to live a good life. And this is fascinating because then we start to try to get into dialogue with really the author as well as the words on the page. And this is what we start talking about is, you know, well, okay, then, do I agree with this? Do I agree that this is how reality works? We all have different perspectives on reality. You know, what can I take away from this particular perspective? You know, there are some books which I feel answer the question with an implicit claim that there is no such thing as a good life. I disagree with that. A good life is achievable, even if it's very, very hard to achieve. And maybe, you know, we need to look at the definition of good even at this point. Anyways, like, I think every book has a claim. And once we can think about what that is, we can enter into dialogue with that. You know, I think a lot of parents want what's best for their kids. At least, you know, in my circles, I have a lot of friends who are parents. They're really working hard to give their kids the best life possible. They want to support them, and it's so beautiful. So I'm not a huge fan of the books that try to set parents up as the villains. I totally recognize that that can be well done, actually. Now that I'm thinking about it, most fairy tales are like, you know, they have wicked stepmothers and stuff. So, but that is also done in a certain way where I think a lot of times the claims in the fairy tales are overcoming difficulty. Like, you can overcome hardship and there will be beauty in the end of it. I agree with that claim. A lot of fairy tales are, you know, show hardship and show people overcoming it. And they're making a really strong claim about your character. You need to be strong. You need to be kind. You need to be courageous. So I agree with a lot of those claims. I think that there are some books where, you know, the characters are just kind of being a little spoiled and it works out for them. I think that's not how reality works. I think if you're self-centered, unable. Okay, my recording paused. So I'm going to try to jump back in and see how this goes. Yeah, anyways, I think there are some claims that that I agree with, and there are some claims that I don't. And then this is really fun. This is when you want to have a friend reading the book with you and kind of analyzing, what do you think the claim is? Because maybe there's, you know, we're all bringing stuff to the table. We're all bringing stuff to the book. And maybe you're like, this character, you know, this character is trying to make the claim that, you know, it's okay to be spoiled. And you feel like they're being more spoiled than they actually are in the text because they're reminding you of someone who is spoiled, you know, or you're bringing kind of a stereotype or a prejudice or even just a wound, you know, a bit of trauma maybe, like that you're bringing to the story that you're reading into it, where maybe someone else is going to see a different side, or maybe they're going to have the wound and they're going to have the struggle with a character or a situation that you don't have a problem with. And this is when it gets really, really fun. So get a lit club, get a classics book club going and kind of have this discussion of what are you seeing? Yeah, what do you think the story is claiming? What claims is the story making? And what do we think about that? It's, you know, forgo all the small talk. Get real deep. This is so beautiful. So, yeah, that was a huge one. So and I'm going to do the recap thing. Get a book you like. Be patient with yourself as you enter in. Get to know the characters in the setting and ask yourself all kinds of questions. And we're going to wrap up with one final point, which is, write. I mean, this podcast is listened to by a lot of writers, or even if you're not a writer by profession, I know a lot of you are just, you do write still. I mean, I think our era really knows the importance of journaling, and a lot of you embrace that. And even if you don't, this is just a great thing. I mean, I'm a literature teacher. this is what I'm going to say. It's like, write about it. But here's the deal. I think this kind of gets back to what I was saying about holding a pen or a pencil and changing this from a lecture into a dialogue. I mean, if there's an old Greek guy telling us about his life, that's cool. But what's really, really cool is when we start kind of letting that help us grow, when he starts to become like a teacher, you know, when Homer starts to be able to give us tips on how to live our life better, that's when literature gets kind of magical. That's when it's like, this is going to help me be a better fighter in my own school when I stick up for, you know, what I want to do with my life, because I was able to read how these heroes of old stuck up for themselves. Or this is going to help me not be so vengeful and wrathful towards my sibling. When I read about how rage, the song of rage, you know, how that really hurt these other characters. So I think that's when literature really starts getting beautiful, is when you start to enter into dialogue with it. How is this shaping you? How are you shaping other people's perspectives of these characters? You know, having a conversation with it. I guess I say write, but really just enter into dialogue would maybe be a better way of saying my fifth point, is like, enter into dialogue with the story. Talk about it with other people. Talk about it with me. Send me a message if you read a classic and you have a strong feeling about it, or any feeling about it. Send me a message. I love to hear about this stuff, because I think there's something really rich, and it's such a privilege to be able to look into new and beautiful snapshots, or even just new and tragic snapshots, but any kind of look into the human perspective and the human experience, how we're able to get into that better and better understand that, who we are, where we come from, where we can go if we're intentional about it, is so cool. So do that. I mean, I like the idea of writing a piece about it, like writing a blog post if you have a blog, or writing a social media post. I don't care. Write anywhere. Write in your journal. But I like the idea of writing about it, because then you have the words kind of preserved. And what's fun then is if you ever read the book again, which obviously you should if it's a classic, is then you get to kind of build a little bit deeper. Where you get to say, okay, what did I see last time that I missed last time? And that's what's really, really fun. I could probably talk all about rereading books as well. Obviously, don't reread it if it's just boring and you're just not connecting at all. But there are often, if you read it and you enjoyed it, there's probably other things that you'd enjoy the second time around reading it. So that would be my suggestion to anyone who enjoyed a classic. And I know a lot of us have our favorite rereads, so that's fantastic. I guess I'll just kind of wrap up by saying, you know, this podcast is about magic in the ordinary, and I feel like oftentimes it's easy to kind of assume that classics, these lofty books that have captured scholars' attention for hundreds plus years, it can be intimidating, and it can kind of feel like an advanced level of magic. Like you have to be a wizard, you know, like you can't access these great works unless you have all of this skill, all of this, I don't know, this speed. Like I feel like even as readers, avid readers sometimes, I don't know, for me, I feel like there can be pressure of like, what are you reading? How many books are you reading? All of this stuff. And that's not helpful. And that's not even true in terms of like, it is not true that you have to have a certain elevated level in order to really get a lot. Like you don't have to have a degree, an elevated degree, or you know, advanced history knowledge in order to really get something out of these books. Can that help? I mean, yeah, if you take classes on a book, it's definitely going to help. AKA sign up for Adventures in Excellence. my business. So classes can help. Having some historical background obviously can help a lot. Knowing about the author can help. But I think that it's so important not to make like obstacles to literature, or not to make it elitist, I guess. Like, these books are treasures because they give us really well-written, powerful glimpses into what it means to be us, what it means to be human. And that should be for everybody, right? That should be, we all deserve, you know, if those books are out in the world, we all deserve to pick those up and to really enjoy them. Whether it takes us, you know, 3 years to get through a book, and I've had friends who took like 3 years to get through Dracula, that's fine. That's okay. She probably got way more out of it than I ever did because she's really delving deep into every single word there. And maybe, you know, part of it was because she was distracted, but she still got a lot of content out of it. She's got lots of ideas from it, right? And so I feel like books are ordinary. You know, we all have them on our shelves. Hopefully, if not, go get Dracula, Pride and Prejudice, and the Iliad. But books are incredible. They're ordinary. And we all deserve to have that chance of like delving in and analyzing it and feeling like we have a voice too. Like, I don't care if you're a lit major or if you are a science major who's never picked up a literature book before and you're like, or ancient classic before and you're like, you know, do you have a voice in this conversation? Yes. Yes, because you're human. And these books are all a dissection into what it means to be human. We 100% all have really good thoughts on these things. We have a place at the table. So pick up a book, send me a DM about it. Let me know what you think about, the latest classic that you've read. What do you think about this? We all have a voice here. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye.